Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice. Hello, everyone, and welcome to EB5 Investment Voice. I am your co-host, Mark Deal, and as indicated before, I would like to introduce you to our host, Mona Shaw. Mona, how are you doing today?
I'm very well, Mark. Thank you very much for the introduction, and hello, everybody. I'd also like to welcome on this show a couple of other attorneys from our firm, Rebecca.
Hi, Mark. How are you? Hi, everyone.
And Omar.
Hi, Mark. This is Omar.
Hey, Rebecca. Hey, Omar. So I know we've got a lot planned, well, really, for the show, the series, and this is our first episode. So let's go ahead and lay some groundwork. Let's tell everybody what we're going to be talking about.
Right. Well, Mark, we're very excited about this whole podcast session. And what we really want to do is be a little different. There's a lot of material out there now for EB5. And yet there isn't very much material. We really want to go and set the record straight on some areas and really talk about new areas where people haven't gone before. People haven't even come near, or they haven't really touched. We are really aiming to go and ask those questions that people have emailed to us, that have come up in projects. We have quite a unique practice, actually, Mark. We are immigration attorneys and an SEC and corporate attorney in Omar. Other than just doing project work and investor work, we do a lot of marketing and we do a lot of traveling. We do a lot of one-on-one with people of all types. We have small developers. We have large developers. We have individuals who come to us and want to put up a project. We have individuals who come to us and are confused about all the projects out there. And we have individuals who are not even sure whether EB5 is for them. We are also involved with bodies such as the IIUSA Policy Committee. That gives us a huge advantage because we can see what's coming up in the legislation. For example, last year we were very much involved with the draft legislation and redrafting and the nuances. And we also work with almost every group out there, one way or the other, in EB5. EB5, as you know, Mark, is a very small fraternity. There are only a handful of real players. There's a lot of people trying to come in. There's a lot of information there which has a lot of misconceptions and inaccuracies. Our aim, really, in this session of podcast is to rectify a lot of that.
So, Mona, you mentioned that EB5 specialization within the immigration field is a very highly specialized area, and you've been doing this for a while. How long have you been involved with EB5?
I've been actually involved with EB5 from the very inception of the way you see it now. I did do some EB5 cases back in the late 90s and early 2000s when it was standalone or an entrepreneur-type visa. EB5, as you see it today, is really began or took off in about 2005.
So it's pretty safe to say you've heard almost every question at least once, twice, and some of them maybe more than a couple dozen times, right?
Oh, absolutely. And not only have we heard every question, but we've seen how this has evolved. Of course, going back in the early days and even back in 2007, 2008, you know, USCIS weren't able to answer. They didn't know what was going on. There were only a handful of attorneys, and there really is not a lot of precedent material in this area, unlike other areas of immigration law. So you don't have much to work on.
And that's just it. You don't have much to work on, but you've got a lot of experience there. And I'm looking at an episode list of over a dozen episodes that we plan to deliver to the person listening right now. That is, if they subscribe and they'll get these episodes delivered to them for free. But this is all based off of your experience in the EB5 industry. So it's not something we've just kind of come up with or looked at, different case law, but this is based off your experience and the experience of those at your firm, as well as working with other clients and answering an enormous amount of questions. So we're not just doing this as an academic skill. I mean, this is really based off of what people are asking, and that's the shows that we're doing, right?
Mark, we pride ourselves in being practical. We are very much in-your-face attorneys in the sense that we will tell a client or an investor that you don't have a case, or we don't mince words, put it this way. Even though I'm English, it's probably the New Yorker now. I've adopted New York so much. But I have to tell you that we're very excited. We have tried to choose the appropriate person to talk with us on each panel to expand the contents of the podcast and to give the listener a different take, really, on what we're talking about. Because we're not just out there for an investor. We actually are aiming to talk to investors, developers, and even to our legislative folk.
And you mentioned you and your attorneys don't mince words. You briefly introduced us to Rebecca and Omar at the top of the show. So let's bring them back.
Here we have Omar Hakim. And he has the difficult task of working with a lot of female attorneys. he doesn't really get involved at all with the immigration side because he is purely SEC and corporate. I'll let Omar carry on and describe himself.
Excellent. Hey, Omar.
Yeah, so as Mona mentioned, I handle all the corporate securities matters. And the way it's tied in the EB-5 is that in order to get the green card, they must make an investment. And as they're making an investment, all these traditional corporate and securities matters come up that more than any other investment. So we have to prepare all the documentation, the operating agreements, business plans, private placement memorandums. And it's really a standard corporate practice with EB-5 thrown on top of it, dealing with all the immigration issues and making sure the investments are structured in such a way that if an investor invests in one of these projects, they will get their green card.
Mark, the other thing is that we often, we do a lot of co-counseling with attorneys and we troubleshoot for not just attorneys, but for regional centers. We've seen a lot of problematic cases. And we have seen a huge amount of cases come up over the last couple of years, which are corporate related, where somebody wants their money out for one reason or the other from a project, but they're stuck because of a certain operating agreement, or rather the developer has been stuck because an operating agreement hasn't been drafted correctly, for example. So there's a lot of practicalities involved because the one big issue that people forget is that, yes, we're immigration attorneys. EB-5 is immigration. The project is a business. A business will continue after a person gets his immigration status.
Agreed. And I know Omar is a very popular man. I met him in Washington, D.C. at the American Immigration Lawyers Association. He's an SEC attorney, business attorney, not necessarily immigration attorney, but he was there at the immigration conference.
Well, we sent him. We sent him and said, go learn some immigration.
Well, I know that, more than one immigration attorney is like, oh, there's an SEC attorney here? Let me pick the brain. And I know he's got a lot of wealth of information to share. I got a chance to chat with him a little bit one-on-one, and I'm excited to bring his voice and his experience on the show here and really let the listener kind of seep some of that in themselves.
Right. Just because the investor is investing for their green card doesn't mean they don't have to navigate all the issues they would in any other investment. So it's really important to have someone that understands all the documents that basically signing up to and make sure everything's structured properly. At the end of the day, they can get their money back if the project goes as planned and also get their green card.
We have here Rebecca Singh, and Rebecca works primarily on the immigration petitions and project documents. She is somebody also who the clients love to speak to. So she's often the person who will come and say, well, yes, I remember that client. He had this problem. She's everybody's go-to person in our office.
Why, thank you, Mona. I just wanted to say that as the immigration attorney, I deal a lot with the investors, as Mona had mentioned, and that not only the investors, but we work with the project developers as well. I work with Omar to be sure that documents are done correctly and that we work with each developer step by step so that in the end, the investors, as you mentioned, will get their green card and will get their money returned.
Well, Rebecca, it definitely sounds like you have a difficult job, not only with working with different people inside the firm, but also the different types of people and the different stages and the different understanding they may have with EB-5. It's certainly a challenging job.
Actually, she does have one of the most difficult tasks, Mark, because most of the time, especially if it's one of those slightly green developer, we give it to Rebecca to deal with because she's the one who has the patience to slowly explain, oh, we need this, no, that's not quite right. Because when we are dealing...
I'm laughing because I've had Rebecca, in a very gentle, smiling way, explain a couple things to me in the last year or so. also regarding EB-5. So I'm glad to bring her on the show as well.
She's great. Yeah, everybody else gets impatient. We deal with a lot of developers who want to use their own in-house people. And it's very difficult to use it working with in-house people when you're dealing with EB-5. So Rebecca's really wonderful explaining issues to these with the developers, as well as some of the important people that you have to use, like accountants and stuff. And a lot of these professionals talk in a different language. And we have to translate that language to something everybody understands.
Great. So we have you, Mona. We've got Rebecca and Omar there. And I know we're going to be hearing from at least one other attorney in your firm. We've already talked to a few guests in episodes that our audience is going to be hearing in the near future. But before we get into it, since this is our first episode talking about EB-5, perhaps now is a good time to talk about what happened with EB-5 in 2015.
2015 was, everybody will say it, the most unique year ever, as in EB-5 history. It was so active all the way through. Usually at the end of the year or the beginning of the following year, we discuss topics and things that happened the year before, and we have our usual. And we have our list even this year of all the events that happened. But of course, everything was dominated by the legislation and the rush that, oh my God, we've got to file before September 30th. Phew, we've got till December 11th. Oh, we've got to December 14th. Oh, no, it's gone on again. We have to September 30th, 2016.
And here's a little insider information. Mona, I remember you and I going back and forth an email during this, and you're telling me that, like, oh, there's been two revisions today. It's going to get extended through 2 days, the end of the week, and then we're in this situation. So.
Well, there are big issues, Mark. There's a number of reforms which are needed in EB-5, and they got mixed up with reforms that would hurt certain projects, which is certainly one of the reasons why things were delayed. But we're talking about three areas. We're talking about practical source of funds areas. There was a report which was released last year, the GAO report, Government Accountability Office, and they came down pretty hard on USCIS, that the USCIS were letting investor source of funds go through without really working on it really diligently. And Rebecca's going to talk to you a little bit about some of the issues which came up as a result of that GAO report. And, of course, all of these things were translated in the legislation. Then there's an entire area relating to SEC and broker-dealer and other integrity measures and practical measures that Omar's going to mention to you, that although were brought in the draft legislation, they didn't go through, but there is legislation going through this year. And USCIS are going on their own volition and putting in certain measures themselves, such as site visits, random site visits or mandatory site visits, that hasn't been decided. I think so far it's random, right?
Yeah, right now it's random. In the integrity bill, they wanted to charge a fee to each regional center, and that fund would be used to conduct annual site visits of every regional center. But as the integrity bill hasn't gone through yet, USCIS does have the funding to do random site visits, which they are doing this year.
That's good to know, because there's a lot of people out there who I think would probably get a little bit of a shock if they knew that USCIS might knock on the door and just want to see their project. And the other third part was the actual mechanics, which included TEA. And Mark, last year we also saw something very interesting as well. We saw USCIS clamp down on marketing issues. Well, for example, they clamped down on our regional center's use of names. I think that you're going to see a lot of progress here with regards to marketing and moving forward on stuff. But Omar, do you want to comment a little bit on USCIS's clamp down of regional center's use of names?
Yes, many regional centers included words such as U.S., federal, and those type of things to make their regional center more marketable. USCIS came with a position that this might imply a false sponsorship or relationship with the U.S. government. So they made those regional centers change their name, and that just consisted of making a corporate filing as you would with any other company and just submitting that filing to USCIS. But it just shows, as Mona mentioned, that they are taking a more close look at the way regional centers are marketing themselves.
Yeah. And one of the frightening things which happened last year, Mark, was the prosecution of a bunch of immigration lawyers for broker-dealer violations. And that was frightening because these were just small-time lawyers who had just got an investor and had put that investor in a certain project and been given a commission for it. Their investor client didn't know that they were getting a commission, of course. And we often question attorneys like that as to whether they really understood the nature of the project that they put their client into, or whether they just went into the project just because they were getting a commission. Well, SEC got a hold of a bunch of names. They prosecuted them. And even though these immigration attorneys might have only done it once or twice and said sorry and returned funds.
So it sounds like immigration is cracking down on names, which may give the perception to investors that that regional center is somehow affiliated with the national government, which is not. And they're also cracking down on immigration attorneys that may be making suggestions for regional center, whether for compensation or not.
Then no,
it's for compensation. No, you are allowed.
Okay.
Okay. See my SEC attorney telling me to shut up.
Hi, Mark. It's Rebecca here. I just wanted to chime in that what we do is we do advise our investors that if they are still uncomfortable with the business plan or any information, they can go ahead and seek a third party, maybe a financial advisor, to go ahead and give them that more in-depth advice than what an immigration attorney can do. So, Mark, last year what we saw in the beginning of 2015, there were some issues on source of funds. But I just wanted to note that USCIS did become strict in loans. They were had an issue with indebtedness, whereas the petitioner, you couldn't just say you had a loan. You also have to show collateral.
That didn't used to be the case before, right, Rebecca?
Exactly.
Yeah, beforehand, there are many, many petitions that were filed and approved when you just have a loan without any collateral.
Exactly. Just throw
a loan from an uncle or a loan from a friend or even a loan from a father.
Exactly.
We saw some surprising things come in.
Yeah, so they really want to see collateral against each loan. So what we're going to see now in 2016, or what we saw in the draft bills, is that not only with the loan having collateral, they're thinking of even, you know, becoming even stricter on that, and where they're going to hope to have loans coming from third-party institutions. So you're not going to have loans coming from an uncle, a father, any family members. They want to see loans coming from banks or other institutions of that nature. What we're also going to see is that for gifts, a lot of our investors have, they've received their funds from gifts as well, but they're going to make that a lot stricter as well in the fact that they're going to limit that to immediate families instead of just friends.
Well, I think I should just clarify that point. These two issues were in the draft memo from last year, 2015. We think that USCIS might start implementing some of the measures, but not all. Like, for example, they're not going to implement gifts coming from non-family members just yet, unless they're required to by legislation. But that is something coming forward.
But that's something that we're seeing. That they want to clamp down.
So it's definitely in a state of flux, but it does sound like they're certainly cracking down on regional center names. They're cracking down on the source of funds and how those funds come in and how they're tracked, as well as how attorneys may be compensated for referring various regional centers or not. So it sounds like the EB...
No compensation.
Right, no compensation, but they're cracking down on it is what I'm saying. So it sounds like there's more EB-5 oversight than perhaps in previous years. And gosh, wouldn't it be nice if there was a good, perhaps audio resource for people to learn about EB-5 information? Hopefully that's what this show will be about.
Yeah, well, we're doing our best. Well, Mark, it's not just the oversight. Last year was a big year for issues like retrogression. And we do have a lot of investors who write to us directly and are very confused about whether or not the fact that they ran out of visas for mainland China affects them. Rebecca, don't you agree?
Yeah, so just to clarify, we have investors that come from India, you know, Middle East, South America, and they are all questioning about retrogression, but it's important to note that this is just affecting mainland China at this time. So what we saw last year is that to help with the retrogression is that the Department of State, you cannot apply for a visa until your priority date is current. I don't want to go into too much of this, but there is some relief out there for mainland China applicants, especially for those who have children who are aging out.
And I should clarify that mainland China does not include Taiwan, Macau, or Hong Kong, just mainland China only.
Exactly. So what the Department of State did last year in October with the visa bulletin is that they added a second chart. So even though your priority date is not current, it gives you a chance to go ahead and file your documents. So that way, for instance, if you're going through consular processing, if your application was filed prior to a certain date, you can go ahead and pay your fee bill. You can go ahead and submit your documents, and that helps to lock in the child's age. Unfortunately, for those who are going through adjustment of status, USCIS is not accepting adjustment of status applications for that second date. So you do have to wait for your priority date, which is unfortunate.
For almost every country other than mainland China, priority dates are current, which means that as soon as your initial petition, the 526, has been approved, you can immediately apply to get your visa to come into the United States. But along with that, Mark, along with the fact that the issue of retrogression has very much, it's here to stay for a while by the looks of it, unless a lot more visas come out from Congress, the issue of direct jobs and job creation generally had to be addressed. And USCIS has spent an awful long time thinking about this. And then last year they did come out with a draft policy memo, which it looks like they are going to make as law, because we have seen issues on RFEs directly quoting the draft policy memo. And here what they basically stated is that a job, once it's been created, once a permanent position has been created, then that's fine. There is no timeline. There isn't, you don't have to keep that job open for as long as you are waiting for your visa number to come through. There's no 2-year requirement for that position. But people get a lot of confusion when it comes to job creation.
And I could see that confusion for job creation because of the various elements that you've talked about already. And I know we're really going to dive deeper in that when we talk more about the targeted employment areas and really the proper way to do job creation forecasting as well as documentation.
That's right. We are going to try and answer questions. We have, obviously, we have our own knowledge and our own sources, but when we actually ask a guest speaker, and a guest speaker who does have a huge amount of knowledge in that area, we are hoping that we are going to bring a very different perspective to that particular topic.
So obviously there's a lot of topics to talk about with regard to EB-5, but you know, let's not forget who we're really talking to. You know, on this show, we want to speak directly to investors, things that they should be aware of or perhaps look out for. You mentioned project developers, people that are actively creating or managing EB-5 projects and funds, as well as the immigration attorneys that represent both the investors and developers, which Mona, I know you and Rebecca and Omar have a lot of experience with, as well as policymakers. I mean, you've been up there on Capitol Hill during this last, we'll say EB-5 fiasco and failure to really reboot the EB-5 program. Keeping this in mind, what would you like somebody listening to the show to get out of?
Mark, you know, I do also teach an online course a few times a year for Baruch College, which is one of the city universities here in New York. And interestingly, I'm getting an awful lot of project developers because EB-5 is being cited everywhere now as alternative financing. And in a city like New York City, there's project after project where you can see it has been utilized as alternative financing. It's very, very popular now to know about it. Every real estate conference, they are having an EB-5 element. Brokers as well, real estate brokers are talking about it. So we have found that the audience for EB-5 has suddenly mushroomed. And thank you to social media that we are able to have this type of outlet. It's not just writing. We do a lot of writing, as you know, but I think podcasts bring a different dimension to everything, because some of the people that we have coming on to the show, they may not want to say what they're saying to us in a podcast, and they may not want to put that down in writing. So we can try and sneak some really sort of difficult questions to them.
Certainly. And honestly, if anybody on the show talks over my head, I'll certainly jump in and try to clarify, because if I can understand it, well, the person listening may not be able to either. So, hey, that's my job here.
Right. All right. And we also wanted to talk a little bit about marketing as well. There isn't an awful lot there out about marketing, and EB-5, really the essential element of EB-5 is getting the investor to come into your project, and that is marketing. It's good that everybody understands how marketing works and that developers are realistic. But I have to tell you, Mark, that just a couple of weeks ago it was announced, USCIS's Chief Nicholas Colucci did speak in front of the Senate Judiciary. Close to $9 billion has been invested in EB-5, creating thousands and thousands of jobs. This is not a program which can be just left to lapse Side Congress, and you can see how developers all over the country are utilizing it in very unique forms. The types of projects that we are seeing vary. There's all kinds of industries coming in, from transportation, of course, real estate, forestry. Yeah. We even had a gold mine in Alaska. Medical facilities. There's a countless number. Of course, franchise restaurants. There's countless types of industries now using EB-5.
So there's a lot of industries using EB-5. There's a lot of people using EB-5. There's a lot of jobs created from the EB-5 program. And the EB-5 program does enable a lot of people to attain residency status and ultimately citizenship if they want. But again, not a requirement. So, but the EB-5 is a popular program. But I think we could all agree it's a necessary one. But it's also necessary to really understand the ins and outs of it, as well as there's a lot of disinformation out there that we hope to clear up on this show.
Mark, EB-5 is a wonderful program and very necessary for a lot of people who would not be able to come to this country but for something like EB-5. And what I would hate to see is the program ever be closed down just because it was misused, when there is so much good going out there.
Right. An important thing to remember is how EB-5 became so popular in the first place. When we had this great recession recently, banks and other forms of lenders were just frozen up, not lending money to anybody. Savvy developers found EB-5, built the program to what it is, and were able to, you know, keep a lot of economic activity going when there wasn't the banks weren't willing to step in and help them.
Right, and Mark, we have projects that would not have got funding but for EB-5. Not that they're bad projects, they're great projects, but the type of funding they would probably have got would be venture capital or vulture capital, as people would say, and they would lose a lot of their equity. EB-5 have given opportunities. 2016 is set to be, I wouldn't say a carbon copy of 2015, because a lot of people have learned, but we do know there is another deadline, September 30th. And we all know it's an election year, so there is a likelihood or a very, very strong possibility of a further deadline. However, what we advise everybody is that any future deadline may actually be retroactive. Again, we foresee that there will be a mass filing again sometime this year, which isn't great for retrogression. We see in 2016 a continuation of USCIS bringing in the policies that Rebecca had mentioned, and of course the integrity bill, which is Flake's bill.
Right, so there is an integrity bill out there now. Eventually that will probably get wrapped up in comprehensive EB-5 reform, but it gives a lot of ideas of what Congress is focusing on, and everyone else is focusing on TEA, but also focusing on making the program more transparent, ensure that investors are fully aware of everything that's going on with their projects, and also kind of addressing some of the issues with agents in China and the, you know, the amount of control they have over the program.
And of course, Mark, people keep asking us, will the visa number be increased? And I can tell you there are measures out there, whether they get passed or not, to try and increase the existing numbers by reshuffling them. There's two or three ways that they can be reshuffled, including bringing on old unused visas, as well as perhaps taking the dependents out of the 10,000, which is the current limit there. Yes, EB-5 does need reform, and we do need more visas if this is going to continue. And with the speed and the amount of money coming in the EB-5 program, I think Congress will take it seriously.
A lot of the senators and congressmen have shown a willingness to expand the visas and program generally, as long as the integrity measures they feel are very important are implemented.
Right.
So that's another reason why it's very important for the EB-5 industry to support reform and really get it as soon as possible, because we're not going to see an increase in visa numbers until these issues are addressed that many congressmen feel are very important.
So obviously there's a lot of ground that we can be covering and certainly will be covering on the show. But, you know, Mona, as well as Rebecca and Omar, what do you hope that the person listening to not just this show, but the shows coming up, what do you hope that they get out of this?
Well, Mark, we are really aiming for a broader understanding of EB-5, an education in a way that we can give by choosing the right people to cover for the right topics as much as we can.
Right. I think that our plan is to bring in leading people in each specific area of EB-5, such as, you know, economists, other attorneys, regional centers, and just provide the cutting-edge information our listeners need to know if they want to get the EB-5, you know, successful project, and also so investors are fully aware of the current state of the EB-5 market.
Yeah, so to go along with that, we just really want to make sure that our listeners are educated on the EB-5 topic, and that hopefully in the future, with the new bills coming out, that they will have a full understanding and we can have a program that will benefit everyone.
Yeah, Mark, Rebecca actually spends an awful long time educating people. When she ever she's on a call, she's talking for about an hour plus most of the time. And I think that when we hear the same questions over and over again, we do realize that there is a need out there to educate.
Yeah, not just investors, but the immigration attorneys, the developers, the project managers, and also our congressmen.
Sounds great. And I look forward to exploring all these topics and more on this show. Thank you, Mona. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you for being with us today on EB-5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Or call the office at 212-233-7473. Don't worry about trying to write all this down, as it's already embedded in your podcast player of choice. The contact information and other valuable resources can be found there. Now, on this first episode, we touched on a lot of topics of what happened with EB-5 in 2015, as well as what could happen in 2016. We touched upon source of funds, target employment areas, Securities Exchange Commission, job creation, denials. All these are going to be coming up in future episodes. In the next episode, we're going to be further exploring the entrepreneur visa. Make sure you don't miss it by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.